Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Hometown Alaska. I am your host, Shelley Wade, and today my guest is Mayor Dan Sullivan, Mayor of Anchorage. Today we are going to talk about the mayor's proposed 2012 budget and all other topics that may be important to you as an Anchorage resident. So we welcome you to call in and share your questions with us at 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, you can give us a call at 1-888-353-5752, or please email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So again, any questions, all questions about Anchorage, we have Mayor Sullivan here in the KSK studios today. So welcome, Mayor Sullivan. Good to see you.
Thank you very much. Thanks for inviting me.
Absolutely. So we wanted to kind of set the stage and open our discussion today with a pretty broad topic. And that is, when you took office, I'm sure you had in your mind some top goals or priorities that you set yourself and set for the city during your term of service. So I'm wondering, how do you feel like have you made progress on those goals, and kind of what progress has that been specifically?
Sure. Well, thank you. And I've just, in fact, over the last month or so, been giving my State of the City address to different organizations. The Chamber of Commerce hosts this every year, and then I get around to other organizations as well, and give them an update on just that very question. What were our goals going in, and how do we think we're doing so far? And I had really four main things I wanted to do coming into office, and they're really kind of the basics of government. First and foremost, I wanted to see our crime rate go in the right direction. Previous years, over 6 or 7 years, we'd seen a fairly dramatic increase in certain categories of crime, aggravated assault up over 50%, robbery up over 50%, other areas over 30%. And over the last 2 years, we actually have seen a reduction in our crime statistics. Overall crime is down, and at the end of 2010, we are down in 5 of the 7 major categories as well. So we're pleased about that. Really, that is obviously the top priority. If you don't feel safe in your community, you can have the best assets, the best trails, the best parks. But again, if you don't feel comfortable using them, then those aren't very good assets. And some of the things that we've been working on is, when we came into office, the first thing we did was we ended the rolling closures at the fire department that the acting mayor had implemented for budget savings. We have since advocated and successfully got funding for 2 new fire stations. The voters have approved bonds, and the legislature's approved funding for new fire equipment across the board. So we're real pleased that our fire department has got the best equipment to do the best job. On the police end of things, same thing. We are now, on Monday, I officially welcomed our police academy. We've got 29 new recruits who we hope, at the end of a 9-month period — it's almost like a gestation period — they are literally born into the world of the police department. And out of the 29, it's my understanding that these are outstanding recruits. In fact, one of them is the former agent in charge for the FBI here, and he wanted to continue his public service, so he's in the police academy, which I thought was pretty amazing. And so there's always a few maybe that don't make it, but if we can add, 25 or more new police officers to the ranks, we'll be at the highest level of sworn officers on the job that we've ever had in Anchorage, Alaska. So that really helps us towards our goal of community policing, where the police department assigns people to particular areas. They get to know that area. They get to know the business owners. They get to know the kids. They get to know the bad characters. And you build up that trust relationship, which allows the police in true community policing to do an even better job. So in public safety, I think we're making good strides, and that's always, again, job number one. Second thing we wanted to do is, we wanted to make sure there was an energy future for Anchorage. You know, over the last 40 years, we've been blessed to have the cheapest energy, the cheapest natural gas in all of America. Well, over just the last few years, amazingly enough, that has completely flip-flopped, and now we pay the most expensive natural gas in America. So clearly it's a concern, because the dwindling gas supply means that on cold winter days, when it's 10 below zero for a week or two, you may have a disruption in the deliverability of natural gas. Natural gas heats all of our homes, and 90% of the electricity in this area is generated from natural gas. That system cannot go down. So we've worked really hard to get legislation passed in the legislature. In 2010, we were successful. 2 very important bills passed. 1 allows us to develop gas storage. And so on the Kenai Peninsula, starting in 2012, there'll actually be a storage facility. So on those cold winter days, we can draw from that facility and keep the pressure up in the system. Very important. And then the other thing is the second bill incentivizes drilling in Cook Inlet for new gas reserves. I just got out of a meeting just before coming over here with Apache Corporation. Apache is one of the large independents moving into Cook Inlet. They've got hundreds of thousands of acres under lease, and their goal is to get gas into our system. And there's also people like Buccaneer and Escapeda and Cook Inlet Energy and Armstrong. All sorts of independents are coming into play in Cook Inlet. So we're feeling a little bit better about our energy future, and it's obviously so important. Those towns that progress and continue to be modern and grow are all built around affordable energy. Third thing we wanted to do is we wanted to get the city's fiscal house in order. We unfortunately are in a situation where year after year our revenues do not meet our expenditures. And so over the last couple of years, we've worked really hard about making government more efficient and seeing if we can't get those things back in balance. And it's been a real challenge. But, you know, we have to introduce a balanced budget to the assembly. Sometimes it means tough choices. But it also has incentivized us to really look at how we do business and see if we can't do things even better. And particularly in the area of our, I guess what they call the back of the house functions, how you do your payroll and your time cards and your accounting and your IT departments. The city was really way behind the curve in terms of modern processes. So we're updating all those, and we've got more and more functions can be done online. And I think by the time we're done with this investment in our systems, we're going to start seeing some real savings in those areas as well. So the budget's been a challenge, but we're going to continue, I guess, on the path of trying to deliver good service, but do it as most efficiently as we can. And then the final thing was we wanted to make sure that we did a better job maintaining our existing assets. This is probably not going to be an administration that builds a lot of new things. We want to focus on keeping the assets we do have, which are outstanding. I mean, our trails, our parks, our public facilities, the arenas and the Performing Arts Center and the library all lend to the quality of life in Anchorage. And I think we all enjoy that quality of life. But a lot of these facilities are, you know, 30 years old. And if we don't invest in maintaining them and upgrading them for the next generation or two, we'll really be missing an opportunity. So those were my four key things. And I think in every area, we've made some good progress. That was a long-winded answer to a simple question. Sorry.
No, that's a great answer. And I want to reflect a little bit on each of those pieces. But before we do, you're listening to Hometown Alaska, and our guest today is Mayor Dan Sullivan. If you have questions for the mayor, please call us at 550-8433. Or if you're outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. Or, of course, you can email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So, Mayor Sullivan, I'd like to go back to the issue of the budgeting piece.
You bet.
Because we know that you've just released, at the end of September, you released your proposed 2012 budget. I think what folks might be curious about is we know that at least the public process and how the public has the opportunity to provide their feedback on the budget. You did a series of work sessions the last time around. Folks had the opportunity to say, yes, I would actually support more taxes or higher taxes for increased services. And so I'm wondering, along those lines, have those kind of that public feedback on your budget, has that ever caused you to reflect and actually change your mind on something or change your direction? And if so, can you give us a specific example?
Well, what the public said was that we don't mind paying more in taxes, but first you have to prove to us you're spending the money we are giving you as wisely and as efficiently as possible. So that's why our initiatives in virtually every department have focused first and foremost on how do we deliver this service to the highest customer satisfaction, but the most efficient way because we're spending other people's money. And some of the things that we've done to help enhance that, in addition to the things I mentioned just cursory at the start, we've introduced performance measures in every department where each department has to identify specifically what their mission is, what their goals are, how they plan to accomplish those goals, and then measure whether or not they're successful in meeting those goals. And those are all online at muni.org so people can see, are these departments actually achieving what they said they could do, and doing it in a manner that, again, does not waste other people's money.
Is this different than the Building Efficient Services Today initiative, or is that kind of part of the same
package? That's all rolled into it, yeah.
Maybe you could explain a little bit about what that is.
Well, it's just really in every department. We're looking to modernize, to bring in the proven techniques that allow businesses and governments to be the most effective delivery of service organizations they can be. And again, it entails performance measures, it entails upgrading systems, it entails doing more business online, getting rid of paper. And one of the things we're working on right now, for example, is we just led a request for a proposal. It was awarded to CH Tuam Hill, and they're looking at how we manage our fleet maintenance, our building maintenance, and our grounds maintenance to see if there's a way to do that more cohesively and more efficiently. Right now, for example, we have 7 different fleet maintenance shops. Well, a lot of cities our size have 1, and the mechanics are cross-trained to work on any piece of equipment. And so that's the kind of thing they're looking at. And then we're hoping to expand that to look at how we can combine services with the school district. We've been having a series of discussions with the district about doing things like payroll together, about doing any number of accounting functions together, accounts payable, accounts receivable, and certainly grounds maintenance. Does it make sense to have 2 completely different sets of grounds maintenance crews when you could maybe consolidate? So you're right. The public said we're willing to spend more, but the first thing they said was, show us you're spending our money wisely now.
So you've implemented these measurements for assessing that in different departments. So what are the results of that right now? Are we seeing that any one department is more efficient than the other? And has that caused you to implement specific strategies to make your departments more efficient?
Well, I think what we're finding is that departments are realizing that they do not have to spend every dime given to them in their budget in order to achieve good delivery of service. And that's why over the last 2 years, we've actually come in under budget 2 years in a row. And this is very unusual in government. In fact, it's almost unheard of, because the old mantra in government was, if you don't spend everything you're given, you won't get more next year. And we've changed the cultural thinking within government to really focus on, can you deliver the best service you can deliver and not focus so much on spending every dime in your budget? And it's really starting to pay off. That and the performance measures, where people now have to account for what their activities are. And we're focusing more on, you know, in government, oftentimes people think they're being successful by their activity, when your success should be measured by your results. And so, again, department by department. Is there any specific example? There are some very specific examples. The police department, for example, under Chief Mew, has done an excellent job in cutting down on overtime just through good management and watching the numbers and making sure that people are properly deployed and you know, the shifts are done right. And we're starting to see that in a lot of departments. We also have a cost containment committee that any request for travel, for new hires, any of those ancillary expenses first have to go through the committee. And they're pretty tough. You really got to make your case before they're going to let you spend discretionary money.
So it looks like we have a caller online. Hi, Charles. You're on Hometown Alaska. Welcome.
Well, thank you very kindly. And thanks, Mayor.
Hi, Charles.
I do have a question. I've been a longtime resident of Anchorage, maybe 20, 30 years, 40 years, well, since 1966, with a few years missing in the military. But I moved out to the Valley, and now I'm living across the street from a Anchorage police officer. And he's been driving, you're talking about expenses. So he's been driving his car home for the last 2 or 3 years. And you're talking about saving money, and now he's got a brand new truck. And he lives past the river, man. So how can you say that? I mean, they're out here. They have like $35,000, $40,000 cars. They're driving probably 100 miles a day at maybe 4.5. I don't know where do you get your gas at, but where I get mine is you know, around the $4 area. How can you say that you're saving money when you've got people driving clear out to maybe Thunderbird Falls, where just about every chief lives, or it has something to do with the fire.
I get your point, Charles. Let me answer. First of all, I thought you said you lived in the Valley, and we don't allow
them.
We don't allow them to take their cars to the Valley. They can take them as far as the boundaries of the city, which includes Chugiak, Eagle River, and of course Thunderbird.
You're wrong. You are wrong.
Well, if you can identify, well, Charles, just wait a second. If you can send me an email and tell me just exactly who you're talking about, I will track that down for you, because it was my understanding that that was discontinued some time ago and that they have to actually leave their car at a kind of a way station in Chugiak there and pick them up on their way into town.
So, Charles, we appreciate your phone call, and if you could email the mayor, and that's available on your website.
Yeah, all he has to do is mayor@muni.org.
Okay.
Thanks, Charles.
But Charles, I guess, missed the bigger point is, you know, is there an exception? Did that guy take his car home and wasn't supposed to? You know, that's a small incident when you're talking a $450 million budget, a budget where we have identified every year dramatic savings. And like I say, 2 years in a row, we have come in under budget over $10 million each year. So, Charles, I can quantify that for you if you want the details.
Well, let's come back to the budget question then. And one of your, I guess, top four goals or priorities as you were taking office and in terms of that getting your fiscal house in order piece. So I went online to your webpage and saw that there was a great little poll there on the side that I participated in. And the question was, if it becomes necessary to raise additional revenues, which would you find most acceptable? And I noticed that when I voted that the top three vote getters were seasonal sales tax, sales tax, and an alcohol excise tax. So I'm wondering, do you think that we're in a position where we need to raise an additional funds and increase our revenue? And if so, which of those forms of taxes or other means would you propose would be the most efficient to do that?
Sure. The diversification of taxes, I think, is important. We have over, I think, 55% of our tax revenue comes from property tax. And quite frankly, you know, just like with people's investments, your broker tells you to diversify, and I don't feel we're probably adequately diversified. I do favor a sales tax. I could accept a seasonal sales tax. I think consumption taxes are more fair because it's broad-based in the sense that, for example, we have an awful lot of tourists come through town. We have seasonal workers. We have commuters from the valley, I think over 15,000 a day. They use our roads, our emergency services, but they pay nothing into the local economy. So unless they stay overnight, of course, there's bed tax. But so a sales tax, I think, would be fair because you would indeed then broaden the base of who contributes to your revenue stream. The question has always been whether or not that sales tax should be under the tax cap and simply replace property tax dollar for dollar, which most people seem to favor, or be a source of new revenue outside the tax cap and then add to the amount of money the city collects overall. You know, that debate can go on, but the bottom line is with either form, it takes a 60% vote of the people to approve a sales tax. And so far, the four times that's been on the ballot over the last several decades, it has failed miserably. I think there's a general distrust when you give government a new form of revenue that they'll just find a way to constantly increase it, and you'll end up paying a lot more now than you are, a lot more in the future than you are currently. So, again, I think adding a sales tax to the mix makes some sense, but the voters so far haven't seen the logic in that.
Well, let's go back to the idea of the bed tax then, if we could just talk about that one specifically, because
sure.
You mentioned tourism as one of those other revenue sources.
It is.
So along those lines, we know that there's over a million folks that visit Anchorage every year. So they're spending like a day or two in town kind of at the outset. What about giving folks another reason really to stick around a little bit longer? So we see that other communities are around the lower 48 are building their tourism infrastructure. I wonder about the municipality's ideas and your ideas for investing in tourism development and tourism infrastructure. So things like walkable streets and access to parks and winter recreation. Kind of, what are your plans along those lines to capture more of that additional revenue that it sounds like we really need?
Well, I think when tourists come here, they're obviously they. Some of the feedback we get, they love Anchorage because we do have such good trail systems, such nice parks. We have more parkland per capita than anywhere. We've got world-class trail systems. So I think we're doing okay in that regard. What I think we're lacking, though, is maybe some attractions of a larger scale, iconic type attractions, whether it's an aquarium or some sort of a more of historic sort of facilities. One of the things
You've
I've been...
got the Anchorage Museum.
The museum's awesome, and so is the Native Heritage Center. Mm-hmm. But when you look at other cities, I just was in Charleston, South Carolina on a mayor's design conference, and the project I brought to the group, and it was a group, by the way, that paid my way there, so it was easy to participate, was the development of the Ship Creek area. Here you have a world-class salmon stream running right through the middle of your town. We're severely underdeveloped in terms of boardwalks, fishing platforms, and again, some sort of an anchor tenant down there that would be literally, I envision something that would be an iconic piece of architecture that as you came up Cook Inlet, you would look at that just like you look at the Sydney Harbor or the Oslo or any of the other great cities, and you'd go, wow, that's Anchorage, Alaska. And so that whole Ship Creek area is amazingly underdeveloped. It's the Pacific Ocean, and I can't imagine many cities with waterfront along the Pacific Ocean as underdeveloped. So we're working with the railroad. They own most of the land there, and to see if we can't get some new development ideas to really enhance a tourist experience, plus not just for the tourists, for the residents as well.
Well, that's a good transition. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska. I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and my guest today is Mayor Dan Sullivan. And we're talking really about all things Anchorage. So if you have questions for us, you should give us a call here at the studio at 550-8433. And if you're calling outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. Or email us at hometownalaskapublic.org. So right now we're talking about the mayor's proposed 2012 budget, and specifically we're talking about some of this need for increased revenue and tourism as a potential revenue source. And then Mayor, you just mentioned actually, the development, the parks and rec development, or these other developments aren't just for tourists, but for residents as well.
Sure.
So along those lines, I thought we should talk about, the quality of life in Anchorage. And really, Anchorage gets big points for quality of life and from a lot of resources for our parks and for our air quality. So I'm wondering, and that ranking is based on, like you said, park acres per person. Mm-hmm. So I'm wondering, how does Parks and Rec bode in your 2012 proposed budget? What does that look like in comparison, and what can we expect from your Parks and Rec budget?
Sure. Let me just complete one thought there first. One of the things we're asking the legislature for this year in terms of the tourist development is the Tony Knowles Coastal Trail and the Ship Creek Trail right now do not meet. There's a large gap in between, and we're looking to develop a boardwalk connection there that would really be a great start for the development down there of Ship Creek. And if we get that funded and get that built, it would be just an amazing asset for that whole region down there. So we're hopefully going to make that kind of the starting point. And then the railroad's actually looking to develop an amphitheater right across the street from the railroad depot. There's a hill, and you would have seating going up the hill with the amphitheater down at the bottom for public events and special events. And so we're starting to put some little pieces together on it. Back to Park and Rec, though. Park and Rec, obviously, is one of those departments that sometimes, never quite gets the funding people think it should get, but at the same time, they do a pretty amazing job of keeping the parks clean. And I think we've gotten more compliments the last 2 years about under the reorganization of Park Director John Rada, his teams are doing an amazing job keeping our parks and trails clean and safe and upgraded. And we've done, with partnership with the Parks Foundation, we've been working on improving all the neighborhood parks. We've done, I think 7 this year, plus 9 other parks that were done by the youth employment in the parks. So really, it's become more of a collaborative effort where the department alone isn't the only entity working on our park system. With the foundation leveraging money and with the help from the state legislature, we really are doing an awful lot to make our parks even better. The budget-wise, their budget goes up this year, but overall, there is some changes. John has decided he can do some things more efficiently. Every department was charged with finding efficiencies, and so he's converting some full-time positions to seasonal positions because, quite frankly, in his analysis, he's able to accomplish some of those great events that we have, whether it's ski races or the Tuesday night races or any of the other programs we have. He thinks that we can deliver them at the same level of service, but at the same time save money within his department. So that's what we're going to do.
So we have someone else calling in. Sydney, you're welcome to Hometown Alaska. You're on the air.
Hello, Mayor.
Hi.
Hello. I'm a native-born Alaskan, the same age as your family member, Susan. And I have some sour grapes to air on the radio. I'm very interested and very supportive of the Ship Creek development you were talking about.
Yes.
And back in Tony Noel's administration as our mayor, several of us down near 7th and C, 8th and B, were contacted by some people that wanted our homes that were going to be close by the new federal building. And we were persuaded to donate them for a future development called Project 80s. And there were 13 of us that very reluctantly but very proudly donated our homes to the city. And they were taken to the dump and either crushed or they were burned. And it's a real sad thing that we had such a generosity in our hearts and were led astray on that. And we lost a lot of heritage, a lot of history of Alaska doing that. So I hope that anything that happens in the future is considered a little more carefully.
I don't quite know how to respond. That was before my time, and I'm sorry that happened.
But
I think you can count on our commitment that, you know, we're, as somebody who, you know, born and raised in Alaska, I cherish our history, and I'll do everything I can to, if there are any projects that go forward and they involve those sort of choices on historical properties, that you have my commitment that we'll do everything to preserve the unique character of Anchorage.
Oh, thank you on that. The home that I donated was built by a man named Jake Markley, who was a craftsman up here, and it was built in 1939. And they cut the house in half with a chainsaw, and when they pulled it off, the stack pipes, this obviously was built during the war, the stack pipes were solid copper. So it was, you know, a home with oak floors and leaded glass and glass doorknobs, and was going to be the anchor home for the railroad village that they planned.
Thanks, Sydney, for your phone call.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. We're going to take a short break, and when we return, we've got Mayor Dan Sullivan on the line here. We're with Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Shelley Wade.
You're listening to Hometown Alaska on KSKA Anchorage. If you missed part of today's program or would like to listen again to Hometown Alaska, the program repeats tonight at 7 on FM 91.1. Remember, tonight's rebroadcast is recorded and will not be taking phone calls. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Hometown Alaska on our website at alaskapublic.org. This is KSKA Anchorage.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Hometown Alaska, and I'm your host, Shelley Wade, and my guest today is Mayor Dan Sullivan. Before we took the break, we were talking about a development project along Ship Creek. And Mayor Sullivan, I wanted to, just as a quick follow-up to that, ask you in general about redevelopment in Anchorage. And so you're talking about new development along Ship Creek, but I'm wondering, just looking at Anchorage and being familiar with the town myself, most of the town is built out, but we know that there's a lot of those sections of town, so Midtown and Fairview maybe, that are also a bit run down. So have you thought, or is your administration considering kind of plans to engage the public and potentially private stakeholders in thoughtful and some kind of thoughtful redevelopment process?
Well, I think that's ongoing constantly. If you look at some of the development in Mountain View over the last few years, people like NeighborWorks and RuralCap and Habitat for Humanity and Volunteers for America and others have actually been introducing new home stock into Mountain View because a lot of the existing housing is indeed, in some cases, 50, 60, 70 years old. And that's really going to be the exciting, I think, development opportunity in Anchorage over the next couple decades is the redevelopment of Anchorage. And as you mentioned, I mean, the City Views, the Fair Views, the Mountain Views, those early communities, they were built where they were for a reason. They're close to downtown. All the infrastructure's in place. And what really needs to happen now is a good master plan in each area for how literally block by block those areas will be redeveloped. And that's all ongoing. Under the Comprehensive 2020 Plan, there's about 60 sub-plans that really help engage that process. Right now, we're just completing the West Side District Plan. And obviously, each area has its own challenges. And in the West Side area, of course, you've got the airport, which is not only a major economic engine, but can impact their neighbors. And so each of these subset plans, that's the goal, is to make sure that there is orderly development. And nowadays, with modern construction, you know, northern design and the way things are insulated, the R factors, the use of southern exposure, I mean, it's so much better than it was, you know, several generations ago that I'm pretty excited about the redevelopment of these areas, and there is a guiding process for it.
So we have a caller online. John, welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call. My call is related to development. My family and I recently decided to build an Anchorage, and immediately when we mentioned that we were going to build an Anchorage, we started getting warnings from folks saying, man, you don't want to build an Anchorage. It is the hardest place to build because the codes and the enforcement of codes and the inspection and the city have become so difficult to work with. And frankly, we kind of, you know, took that with a bit of a grain of salt because I understand codes and I understand why they're in place, so I wasn't too worried. But to date, I would say our project is now somewhere between 20 and 22% above what it should have cost because of some of the things that we're being forced to do, where even the engineers involved are saying this is completely redundant, but the city forces us to do it. It doesn't make technical sense, but the city says we have to, blah, blah, blah. Lots of issues around that. And then I spoke with a business owner who has 45 employees in Anchorage, and he was planning on expanding his business in Anchorage, and he has made the decision he's going to move his business to the valley because the cost to build, to meet all the requirements that the city has put on him are just too high. So the question is, if we want to develop Anchorage and we want to redevelop some of the rundown areas, what's the plan for kind of reining in the code enforcement and where we've gone with that?
Well, that's a great question. You know, we reorganized the Planning and Public Works departments last year, and we decided we'd give it a year and see how it was working, whether or not it was still doing the required mission, but at the same time being more user-friendly. We just had a big powwow with the home builders, and we're going to continue to meet with them to see if there's ways that we can reach a little bit more of a middle ground on us being too strict and at the same time enforcing the existing codes. There's sometimes it all depends on who you're working with. I, for example, have a business relationship with a general contractor. I own a small business, and he's my partner, and he also did the build-out of it. And I have another partner in that same business who's a home builder, building a lot of the base housing right now. And I asked him, I said, what has been your experience with our building department? And both of them said they've never had a problem with the building department because they go in completely prepared right from the get-go. And if they have to commit one day to walk their process through, they do it. They know that, you know, being on site and being, again, diligent about making sure things get properly processed. But so I got two people I'm very close with that swear to me they've never had a problem, but then I hear from any number of other people that have those challenges. So, you know, I'm not sure if there's a silver bullet answer to it. One of the things, of course, is we're doing the rewrite of Title 21 right now. That is our land use regulations, and that is the guiding document for how the building department conducts their activities. And I think we're trying to find, some compromises between what was provisionally adopted and what might make it more user-friendly for those people that actually have to live with the consequences, those people who build, those people who manage properties.
Yeah, and I think that, I mean, that's a great start, and I think that's what we have to do is we constantly have to refresh those processes and make it more user-friendly. But I think some of the issues that we're having is that some of the codes themselves were outdated, or they were written such that there's not a lot of leeway. I mean, one example is I had to do soils analysis and drill core holes on my property when the property next door, the property across the street, and the property behind us had all had those samples done. And the city said, yeah, it doesn't make sense. There's no way that you could have liquefaction in that area and not in those others. But the code says you have to do it. So they're kind of, I mean, and I also had to replace 18 feet of 3/4-inch copper line with 1-inch copper line, which from an engineering perspective makes absolutely no difference, but it cost me about $1,500 per foot to do it. And part of that was about $4,000 in permitting and traffic engineering and all that. So, you know, and the impact of that from a erosional velocity in those pipes is next to nothing, but I had to cut the road. So now the road is actually going to need more maintenance because, you know, the folks that are in civil engineering will tell you that cutting an asphalt road and patching it will lead to further damage. So I just think that we've lost a bit of the practicality, and we're actually doing more harm in enforcing out of date or impractical codes.
So thank you so much for your question, John. Mayor Sullivan, I wanted to follow up a little bit on the Title 21 piece. So where are we at with that process right now? I know that's at the top of a lot of people's minds, and especially with Mr. Dan Coffey involved and kind of his contract to rewrite Title 21 and work on the revisions. Where are we at in the process, and what is the process? How is it including the public and including those views that we heard dating way back to 2001?
Yeah, no, this has been almost a decade-long work in progress, but we made the commitment coming into office that we were going to finish Title 21 once and for all. First thing we did was, as you know, we engaged Mr. Coffey to give an independent review. He spent 6 years on the Assembly on the Title 21 Committee, meeting every single week of the year for 6 years to work out the initial draft of it. And then because people who were unhappy with the provisionally adopted chapters were pretty vociferous about it, he met with literally 8 or 10 different organizations to find out what are your top 2 or 3 things that you still have concerns about in Title 21. And again, these are people that actually have to live with the results. So the people that have to build, have to manage, and have the economic contribution to make a project go, and the investment. And, you know, those are the folks that I think have to carry a lot of weight on this, because when you make a capital investment, you're risking an awful lot. And so you want to make sure that that investment is successful, and at the same time that we have standards in there that make sure that we have good development. And so that's the balance you try and achieve. And a lot of folks still felt it was out of balance. So Mr. Coffey basically analyzed Title 21, gave a recommendation on 30-plus areas where he thought the code could be either modified or changed entirely. And I read his report. I read the provisionally adopted Title 21. I made some recommendations and put forth my version of Title 21, and is now before the Planning and Zoning Commission. They will have public hearings. The public will have literally, I think their first meeting is December 8th. And so the public will have over a month to submit comments, and then, of course, at the public testimony. And then Planning and Zoning makes recommendations on future changes, additional changes to the Anchorage Assembly. And the Assembly then will hold public hearings on it. And again, you don't have to go to the public hearing. You can certainly contact your Assembly members through any number of means. So there's two great opportunities for the public to get back involved with it, both with Planning and Zoning Commission and with the Anchorage Assembly. And so the Assembly gets the last word, essentially. They will be able to put their imprint on it, and what they pass ends up being the final version. And I think we see that happening sometime in January or February.
So if you are just tuning in, you're listening to Hometown Alaska. My guest today is Mayor Dan Sullivan. If you have comments or questions for the mayor, concerns about Anchorage as an Anchorage resident, please call in at 550-8433. Or if you're outside of Anchorage, you can call 1-888-353-5752 or email us at hometown@alaskapublic.org. So I was going to switch gears a little bit and talk about transportation. And specifically, I had an email question from a friend here that is related to the new Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center that's going to be built on C Street. Mm-hmm. And wondering about the bus routes there and how is the Muni going to address that? So traffic and getting to and from, the logistics of folks getting those services.
Yeah, we don't anticipate adjusting bus routes for one facility. The bus routes are designed to move the maximum number of people to the highest use areas in the most efficient manner. They do consistently go up both Arctic Boulevard and C Street, which is on either side of the new facility. And it was our understanding that the Neighborhood Health Center was going to have a shuttle bus that would pick people up at the bus stops, both on Arctic and C, and take them to the facility. In fact, we're even giving them a vehicle to do that with.
So just related to that question then, in terms of transportation in general, do you feel like Anchorage is in pretty good shape transportation-wise, or are there specific challenges that we still need to address?
Well, the problem, obviously, in a winter city that is spread out as Anchorage is it's very difficult to deliver the level of service you want. Much easier in a more dense population to truly have a high-functioning transit system. But we do a pretty good job. In fact, just yesterday, I officially welcomed the Alaska Transit Conference, which is in town. Over 100 people, I think, from all over the state and even some folks from out of state. And, you know, they're constantly working on ways to improve systems. And, you know, between our anchor ride systems, which is a door-to-door service, and our general bus service, I think for a city as spread out as Anchorage, we actually do a pretty good job. It's really a function of money. And, you know, we've gotten great support from the federal government. For the first time ever, the state government actually chipped in money in 2011 for the transit system. Most states consistently fund their transit systems in the urban areas, and the state of Alaska never had till this year.
So we have a caller. Craig, welcome to Hometown Alaska. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I, first of all, would like to say, Mayor Sullivan, when you were talking earlier about combining maintenance shops within the city, that sounded an awful lot like something that Mr. Croft put forward back in the election cycle, and you kind of mocked him for that. So I just wanted to point that out. Secondly, I'd like to say or ask, how can Dan Coffey be independent in reviewing Title 21 when he was on the assembly through the first 6 years of the process? He obviously would have formulated his own opinions and ideas for that. And lastly, I would like to say, how dare you insinuate that the developers in this city have more at stake than the common citizen? I live here, man. I got to deal with this. And frankly, Anchorage is an ugly city, and you're not helping. You're not helping at all. And I'll take my response off the air.
Well, he asked three questions, and this is the second caller that's used the word man. So I don't know what you guys are smoking out there, but you're having too much fun. The first thing you said was that I mocked Eric Croft on the consolidation. That's incorrect. I remember Sheila Selkrag ran an ad where she made kind of fun of him running around with a plunger, but I never once suggested that consolidating services or finding efficiencies between the two major government entities was a bad idea. Not once, and I would challenge you to show me anything different. I think it's a great idea. We've been doing it from day one, and certainly not an original idea with Mr. Croft. I mean, Eric had some good ideas in the campaign, but quite frankly, shared services between the administration of the city and the school district has been talked about for a long time. In fact, there's been two or three major studies done over the last couple decades on it. We're trying to get past the study part of it and actually get into implementation of real things. Secondly, Mr. Coffey, the reason that he was hired was not because he doesn't have an opinion. It was because of his expertise. Not only 6 years on the assembly, working with the Title 21 working group, like I said, every week for 6 years, but also as somebody who has grown up in this community and has an interest in it, I think his viewpoint certainly, I think, was valid and probably a very learned viewpoint. And then finally, as far as the developers. I didn't say they were more important than others. I just said that, quite frankly, when you make a capital investment in something, it's very important that you have guidelines that are reasonable and that allow you to develop, but at the same time, within certain standards. And I think I look at some of the new construction that's happened over the last few years, whether it's the Arctic Slope building on C Street or the JL Properties tower with the Northern Lights on top, or some of the new housing stock that's being developed. Quite frankly, I think we're doing quite a good job in developing an attractive city. If you think Anchorage is ugly, move to the Valley. I think Anchorage is beautiful myself.
So I think just to add to Craig's question, I think what he was getting at too was knowing that process started back in 2001. What is the role and how do the opinions and desires of the people that just live here and work here, how do those play in the rewrites and the revisions as they're considered? And I think you mentioned one is that it'll go to the assembly and there'll be a series of public hearings, so people do have another chance.
Oh, absolutely. There's two forums, as I mentioned. The Planning and Zoning Commission has a public process. They have public hearings, and you don't even have to go to the hearing. You can submit to each of the Planning and Zoning Commission members your thoughts on how you'd like to see Title 21 developed. And then there's a whole second public process with the assembly. And I anticipate they'll probably have a series of public hearings because I think the interest is going to be so high. So there is absolutely no lack of public input from the so-called common guy who, you know, wants an attractive city. We all want an attractive city. Again, the key is really finding that balance between stifling development and making sure that things are built right. And that's all we're trying to do is find that balance.
So we have 12 short minutes left with Mayor Dan Sullivan here on Hometown Alaska. So I'm hoping Anchorage residents out there, if you're in Anchorage or outside of Anchorage, you can give us a call with your questions for the mayor. If you're in Anchorage, 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752. So a topic that I feel like we need to address and cannot miss while we have you here today, Mayor, is the issue of homelessness in Anchorage. And I'm wondering if you can tell us specifically, either within your budget or just your thoughts and future plans for addressing this really stressful and disheartening issue in Anchorage.
Yeah, you bet. Again, top priority of this administration. First thing we did coming into office was we said, whatever we're doing isn't working or isn't working well enough. There's a lot of agencies working on homelessness, but there seemed to be a lack of overall coordination. So I formed my homeless leadership team, which consists of over 40 agencies all involved in one way or another in the issue, whether it's people that provide bed nights or people that provide meals or people that deal with medical issues. And so we brought them all under the auspices of the Homeless Leadership Team and under the direction of the Health and Human Services Department under Diane Engel. And we've had a series of meetings with that group to develop an action plan with very specific recommendations that could actually effect real change. And so some of the changes that we've been able to accomplish, we had to get legislative change, for example, for our cold weather plan. Cold weather plan had been talked about in the previous administration, but nobody had ever taken the time to develop an ordinance that allows it to be in effect, because you can't just open up facilities and say, hey, here's the homeless. So a number of churches have now been certified to take in homeless population, but they have to have adequate beds, adequate bathrooms, adequate fire escapes, adequate emergency procedures. And so we now have a number of churches. Last year alone, over 100 bed nights were available when the other shelters were full. And we've got even more people being certified for this winter. So
now, wasn't one of the goals was to get rid of the camps, though? Is that correct?
Well, I'll get to that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm talking
about. If you could
address
that one specifically.
Sure, I will.
Helpful.
Yeah, you bet. There's like five things we've done, so I'll get to all of them. The cold weather plan's been a success. It's expanding. The other thing is, as you know, just last week we dedicated Carlick Manor, which is going to get the most serious chronic inebriates off the streets. These are the people right now that are dying in the streets and the dumpsters in the alleys. And there's a lot of mixed feelings about Carlick Manor, whether it's enabling, but quite frankly, this is a population that seems to be incorrigible to treatment, and it's not a humane thing to have them dying in your streets. So we're going to give Carlick Manor a try. We've been very aggressive about getting camps out of the parks. It's a public safety issue to me, and as I mentioned at the start of the show here, public safety is job number one. Nobody should be fearful about using a park or a trail, a family with kids, no matter what, because you don't know who's lurking in the bushes or what kind of condition they're in. From a public safety standpoint, it's absolutely essential that we don't allow people to camp in our parks illegally. And illegal is the key word. It's not legal to park and camp in those parks. The amount of violence happening within that population, the amount of violence happening to that population from others who, as we know, there's been occasional beatings of homeless people. And again, the fear factor of the common citizen who can't use a public facility because they're fearful.
So I wonder if you felt like you lost any ground on that particular, on the camps piece, while kind of getting into this legal battle over the constitutionality of the camps, and now and then kind of thinking or focusing energy on like the guy that's on the sidewalk, that kind of stuff. So
no, I don't think so. I mean, there's always going to be legal questions about how to do things right. And so in working through the system, we got parameters that were defined by a judge on how we can give proper notice. And that was a good thing because now we know what the law can read. Before it was nebulous. How do you handle this? So we give 3 days notice. And if we give 3 days notice, we will store their things for them. If we give 15 days notice, that's adequate time for them to take their things with them. And that's what we do. When we give 3 days notice, we do store their things. When we give the 15-day notice, it's their responsibility. But we've been aggressive. But the thing is, we don't want to just clear people out of camps and not find a solution. We've been trying to survey the people in the camps, hook them up with the proper social service providers, and make sure that whether it's a mental illness question or a substance abuse question, or whether they're just temporarily economically displaced, that we get them connected with the right service provider. And that's why we formed the homeless leadership team in the first place, so we would know who those providers are and how to have them be part of this solution.
So Tom is online. Hi, Tom. Welcome to Hometown Alaska.
Hi. How you doing?
Good.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Mayor. I just had a question. I'm really curious about the progress of highway to highway connecting the Glen to the Seward Highway. And I just wanted to know what your take and opinion is on that.
Yeah, thank you.
I'll take my response off here. Thanks.
Yeah, that's I think it's an essential project for the future transportation needs of Anchorage. Connecting the two highways, it means that a lot of traffic does not have to dump into downtown Anchorage. And right now, the traffic situation is creating 4 or 5 intersections that are at D or F grade. And just like in school, D or Fs are not good on transportation grading. It looks like the governor has backed off, I guess, endorsing the project in its entirety. And we're now looking at it as a phased project where we're going to try and do it in 3 phases. And the first one being 36th and Seward Highway, which is the worst intersection in town now. Now that we've built other connecting roads around Lake Otis and Tudor, that's actually turned into a fairly reasonable intersection. But it's 36th and Seward Highway now. It needs work, possibly an overpass and some frontage roads. But one way or the other, that looks like it's going to be the first phase. And then we'll move our way towards Midtown and then towards the Glen Highway. So it looks like it's going to happen in phases, and I support it. You can't have your roads in failure.
Thanks for your question, Tom. So, Mayor, I have a question for you just regarding kind of thinking long-term out in the future and maybe your 10 to 20-year vision for the city. We've got Anchorage demographics show us this aging population and a more diverse population. And I'm curious how or if you have plans for addressing those two specific concerns.
Well, we do have in our Health and Human Services Department a senior citizen coordinator who we work on issues of aging and making sure there's sufficient housing. And it obviously rolls into our transportation needs as well. We've kind of turned from one of the youngest states in the nation. We're not the youngest anymore. We're still pretty young, but we actually have one of the fastest growing senior populations. And more and more seniors are actually staying here. Probably as a function of the property tax exemption and the permanent fund and senior assistance. So, you know, it's kind of a joint combination between the private sector building a senior center housing, and certainly the government contributes through community development block grants and other programs to make sure that for lower income seniors that there's also adequate housing. So it's definitely something that I think a lot of cities are facing, and I can't say that 20 years from now I know what it's going to be like. I'll be a very old senior by then. I hope there's a home for me.
And what about the diverse population? So how has your administration engaged this growing diverse population and ethnic groups in the city, for example, like on your boards or committees? How are you engaging that community of folks?
Well, we actually have, I think, done a pretty good job of outreaching to virtually every community. I look back over my schedule over the last year, and it was just amazing how many different groups and organizations that I've had the chance to meet with, either in my office or out at one of their events. And you know, whether it's the Hmongs or the Korean community or the African-American community, there's no lack of opportunities for us to engage. We've also got bridge builders much more active. They handle our major diversity issues. So I think we're doing a pretty good job outreaching.
Well, this has been a great and very packed hour. Thanks to my guest, Anchorage Mayor Dan Sullivan. Coming up next week on Hometown Alaska, Valley listeners will have a chance to chat with their mayor when Charles Woolforth hosts Mayor Larry DeVilbiss. You can join us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at Alaska Public. Also, make sure to check out our website, alaskapublic.org. Pat Yak is the Vice President of Public Media. Kristen Spack is our web editor and audio engineer. Thanks for joining us today on Hometown Alaska. I'm Shelley Wade.
Hometown Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Telecommunications Incorporated, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect KSKA or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400. This is KSKA Anchorage.